Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I am Nell Newton, your lay leader today. And we are an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome everyone.
Could you join with me? We gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice.
Let us enter the silence together, each in our own deep reflection, meditation, or prayer, and yet each of us sensing our connectedness with one another, those of us here now, those who came before us, and those who will follow, and to whom we give our hopes, dreams, and prayers. Together in this sacred place, this church that is us, let us enter the silence. Grateful for all that we have been together, rejoicing in all that we are together now, overjoyed by the vibrancy we are becoming together. For this moment, let us dwell in the silence together.
You are on a journey. You are heading toward a clear destination. During this year, when it is my privilege to be your interim minister, you are headed towards the final promised land, if you will, of a new settled minister, of a new and vibrant shared ministry together with your new settled minister. You have a path, to some degree, given to you, imposed on you perhaps in the positive meaning of that word, but one in which you share in the consequences of what is happening now, and you shape what your future will be. Many people would say that right now the most important activity for this congregation is the search for a new settled minister. The last I heard, I hope I'm speaking not out of school, even before the beginning of the exchange of packets occurred, there were 7 people lined up knocking on your door saying, "Let me in." 7 people, even before the gate opened, saying, "Please let me be a part of this race to be the minister of this wonderful congregation." That is wonderful because it means that there are a lot more out there clamoring to be your next settled minister, to have the privilege of being with you in your walk together. But I would contend that there is a question of equal or greater significance addressing this congregation right now. I encourage you not to focus on who your next settled minister will be. That will take care of itself. But to focus on another issue, which is the question, what kind of place will we be? What kind of congregation will we be to this new settled minister, coming as they will come with so many hopes and dreams and fears of their own? Into what life will they move? What will be the currents of hope and love and yearning for a better world in this place? The big question for me is, what kind of congregation will you be in September? I encourage you not to think in terms of, well, there is this person out there, this wonderful superhero, and when we find them, they will be able to miraculously lead us in just the way we need to be leaded, and there's nothing we need to do, or there's nothing we need to contribute, that they will somehow magically, like the alchemist of old, make gold out of straw, or the life of this congregation to something wonderful that we could imagine. Instead, I ask you to ask yourselves, who are we? Who do we want to be? Because, my friends, you sitting in the pews, are the settled ministry of this congregation. For the only ministry that really works in our kind of congregations is a shared ministry. And each of you here, whether you're a visitor or an old member, each of you contribute to what that ministry will be. And in this context, it is valuable to ask the question, what do flourishing and vibrant congregations look like? You are certainly a flourishing congregation, but what objective picture can you get of congregations at their best? Fortunately, there is someone who has done considerable work in discerning what flourishing congregations look like. Several years ago, a man named Christian Schwartz, working out of Germany, where he is a church consultant, surveyed 1,000 churches in 32 countries on all 6 continents. 30 people from each church were surveyed. So 30,000 people contributed data to the survey he developed. And the question he was asking is, what are the elements of a flourishing congregation? And here's what he came up with out of all that data and study. And I have translated it for a UU audience in ways I think that would be more understandable to us. The first trait that he said was vital is inspiring worship services. Flourishing congregations have church services that are inspiring, that are in some ways fun, that draws people to them. There is no formula. There isn't a certain way this can happen, but it is vital. In flourishing congregations, the worship service is a gateway, a way to interest and engage people in some large sense of a larger possibility of life. But it is a gateway through which people go and enter many other aspects of the life of the congregation. I think you are beautifully prepared with your wonderful music program and with the inspirational minister you will certainly bring in. You are well situated to fulfill this part of what is needed. Secondly, congregations that are flourishing have empowered leadership. That is, the people who are in the roles of the minister and the staff are given the power and the authority to pursue the mission of the congregation. They are not hamstrung. They are not undermined. They are not operating in such a way that one hand is tied behind their back and they're asked to write. They are given the authority to do what needs to be done to fulfill the mission of the congregation. This involves trust. It involves a church being willing to trust its leadership to do what is right. I have a friend who says, trust, yes, but verify. So it is important to have, how shall I say this, a supervisory perspective or many eyes looking at the work of leadership. But it is imperative to be able to have the level of trust which enables the congregation to let its leaders lead. This is one area where this church is succeeding marvelously. As you develop your governance system, you are entrusting your leaders to do their work. But there is another aspect to this. Flourishing congregations are places where leadership is working as much as possible to empower everyone to lead within the limits of their abilities and proclivities and interests. A thriving congregation is a place where the leaders, while they have a certain formal power and authority, are using their power to empower others to lead and to do what is within their capacity to do. The core leaders of thriving congregations help facilitate others in the constructive and positive and successful pursuit of everyone's innate desire to be of service to others. Number three, thriving congregations are what Swartz calls places of gift-oriented ministry. By this he means the following. In flourishing congregations, the leadership of the church is working very hard to look at every single person in the congregation and say, what gifts does this person have? How can they express their gift to the church? What can every single person do to further the ministry and the mission of the congregation? And to the extent that is done, there is an enormous power released in a congregation. UU churches are filled with highly educated, skilled, and capable people. I think UUs have barely begun to tap into the wealth of talent and skill that is in their congregations. And that is why, one reason why, the position of volunteer coordinator has been added to the budget this year, even though in some ways it will be a stretch. Fourth, flourishing congregations universally have a sense of what Swartz calls passionate spirituality. Let me try to translate this. Flourishing congregations are places where people see and sense and experience other people who have a vision of life that gives them hope, that gives them inspiration, that gives them courage, that magnifies their compassion, and they are guided and inspired through the work of the church to see how this vision of hope and courage and compassion can affect their daily lives. The leadership leads by example, by embodying this greater possibility, greater vision of life. But the whole church is a place where people are catching rays of sunlight. And those rays are saying to people right where they live, there's hope for you. Your life is important. You have work to do. Expressing compassion and being of service to others is important. They're seeing that. They're feeling that. And when they come within the orbit of the congregation, they pick up on that. And that inspires them to live at a higher level. Five. Now, this is one that I really may put you to sleep on this one. But it's also important. It is that Swartz said that all highly functioning churches and all flourishing congregation has what he calls functional structures. Let me explain what he means by that. In thriving congregations, the organizational structure, whatever it is, facilitates and aids and supports the realization of the value and mission and goals of the congregation. In congregations that are not flourishing, the structure of the organization is designed for reasons that have nothing to do with the mission of the church. In non-flourishing congregations, the structure inherited from the past has greater importance than the question, where are we going and how do we get there? And what is most important to us and how do we make it happen? Structure in flourishing churches follows the mission. Let me give you an example of this. I once worked with a congregation where you could walk into the church and go into what was called a lobby. They called a lobby an area where people drank coffee and relaxed and so forth. And there were two huge pictures of the founders of that church, a husband and wife. And these portraits were beautifully painted, and they were mounted on either side of a doorway so that if you entered this room, you couldn't miss this. There was no pictures of a minister anywhere. There was no pictures of anybody else anywhere. I think it's so wonderful that you have all kinds of pictures of everybody in the church here. That's a wonderful tradition. But at this church, you had these huge pictures. And if anybody worked with that congregation very long, you would realize that the church was all about preserving the memory and the way in which this wonderful couple did things 40 years ago. And so in that environment, structure rooted in the tradition had priority over everything else. And it was all out of love. It was all out of good intentions. But any sense of a mission that called upon and required a structure that was different was simply tossed aside. That's what Swartz is talking about. Number six, thriving congregations have what he calls holistic small groups. We call them covenant groups. Let me share with you what Swartz said. If we were to identify any one characteristic as the most important, then without doubt it would be the multiplication of small groups. That is, this is the most important of all these characteristics. 78% of flourishing churches consciously promote the multiplication of small groups. That is, they just don't have small groups. They consciously and deliberately multiply them. The great majority of flourishing congregations, he went on to write, indicate that it was more important for members to be involved in a small group than attend church. Now let me tell you, for a leader of a Protestant organization, that's saying a lot. The area of cultivation called small group ministry or covenant groups is another reason why the position of volunteer coordinator is needed. Seven. Now this is will be the toughest one for you congregations. Swartz said that flourishing congregations are animated by a need-oriented evangelism. Let me translate that. In flourishing congregations, at least 10% of the people of the congregation have to be so on fire about the value of their congregation
that they tell other people in a spontaneous, caring way. This might be a little tough for you use, which are noticeably non-evangelistic. But the point is, a certain segment of us have to be interested enough in the value of what this place is about that we tell others. Finally, number 8. Flourishing congregations are characterized by something hard to quantify and pinpoint, but he calls it loving relationships and lightheartedness. In flourishing congregations, people can feel the love. They can feel that people care about other people. And there is also a sense of lightness, a sense of not being weighed down by the heaviness of life or of the work of the church. Now, allow me a few comments in closing. In UU congregations, there is an extraordinary emphasis on the minister. Even though we have an ambiguous feeling about ministers, and we rebel against authority, there is in UU congregations a tremendously strong focus on the minister. Is the minister going to be right for us? Is the minister going to be perfect? Is the minister going to be charismatic? Is the minister going to be a good speaker? Is the minister going to be a pastor to all people? Is the minister going to be business savvy? And on and on. But it is clear from Swartz research that for congregations to flourish, you don't need a superhero for a minister. You don't need a charismatic leader. You don't need someone whose hair is on fire and who will make your hair get on fire. You don't need a superstar, a know-it-all, or an all-powerful person. In fact, this minister-focused orientation is off the mark. The whole system needs to be what is focused upon. And regarding another matter, did you hear the word money mentioned? No. That is because if and when a congregation is doing these 8 things, money comes naturally. In closing, let us be mindful that this congregation is in a state of transition. There is some uncertainty connected to this, but certain things are indeed certain. Everyone here shares a common destiny. Everyone here will help in shaping what you will become. What you will become deeply and profoundly affects who your minister can be and what he or she can do. There is an opportunity of redefining yourself lying before you. An opportunity to ask, what kind of community do we wish to be? As you make the choices of who you will become, I hope you understand that there are many, many opportunities to redefine yourself in significant ways. I think it is wonderful that a congregation such as yourself during this time of transition can have objective ways to evaluate what it is becoming. Swartz's conclusions are one such resource. I look forward to walking with you on this continuing path as you make your way toward finding your right settled minister. I share with you this benediction before our postlude. May the peace of still deep waters and the strength of our mother, the earth, and a compassion so deep that it reaches towards all persons, leaving out no one, be in us and among us until we gather again in this sacred home of hope. Amen.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.